I want to take this opportunity in closing this debate to thank all members who have contributed one way or another to the debate. Of course, the debate is not complete. Well, not the debate, but the bill is not through until we have voted on it. But I think one of the things that is most satisfying as far as I'm concerned is the fact that members were able to speak freely and frankly as far as the conscience were concerned. However, I must say that there was really one regret, Madam Speaker, in all of this, and I think it's really one of misunderstandings during the debate, is the contribution of the leader of the opposition, who, when we first discussed the times and the presentation, more or less, we have come to some understanding, and for some reason or the other, it was my intention, as I said to him, to grant him an hour and a half, and if need be, we will go for 2 hours. But when I moved the motion for half an hour, I think he thought that that was all that I was offering, but I felt really and truly that it was offering half an hour, leave on, we can probably consider some more time to give him enough time to respond. But I do hope, and we have discussed it and we have agreed that probably we need to sit down and to agree on a way forward as far as this is concerned. Now, Madam Speaker, throughout the debate, and particularly coming from the members opposite, I think I needed to probably respond to certain things and to clear the air on a number of situations. The first one is really, Madam Speaker, is based on my opening statement, which seems to have been misread by a number of members, when I said, I surely wish that things were as they were on the 19th of April 2007. And that the beloved, most distinguished, the Right Honorable Sir John Compton stood here where I stand now. I went on to say, I say so because I'm fully conscious that it is certain that the prayer of hope that his return has brought to so many may also have passed away. I said that prayer of hope may have. Then I went on further to say, but Madam Speaker, though not anointed by the people with the same balm with which he was anointed, yet, having however breathed the political air in his company for over 20 years, and having walked in his footsteps and sat in his cabinet for 10 years as a true and faithful servant of the people, I'm encouraged, as I stand here today as Prime Minister in my own right, and say to Providence, you have called me, here I am. I went further to say, Madam Speaker, that I'm confident that any hope that might have been buried with our beloved leader will be revived and the hands of my will be revived and in the hands of my administration be made to blossom into full flower. I also said, Madam Speaker, I know that our people are not extravagant in their hope, and I give you the assurance that all my ministers, meaning all those seated on this side, are on their mark to rise to the occasion and to respond to the legitimate hopes of aspirations of the people. Madam Speaker, basically what I was saying is, one would have loved to know that our leader, our dear leader, unrivaled in St. Lucia in the Caribbean, would have been here today for us to give him the support in moving this budget. But not being here, we're saying that with all the thrill and the hope that he brought back to this government, that I hope that it still, though it may have been lost, I'm still thinking that there is sufficient to infuse interest, and that the men here on this side possess the necessary confidence and the competence to proceed and to move on with the work of the government. It certainly wasn't shunning away from the responsibility of being Prime Minister. And so I do hope that clears the air on this matter. The other matter which came up quite often during the debate was the question of seven hotels, three tunnels. I mean, the Prime Minister, the leader of the opposition himself, understands project cycles. And when we come here, with a budget, and we indicate that, and we present it, no one is saying that it's presented for this year to be completed this year. If you listen carefully to when I made the presentation, I said those projects are to start this year, and I'll read it from the presentation if you can follow. It is page, no, it's 15. Oh, 9, okay. Yes, Madam Speaker. If you read on page 16, it says, Madam Speaker, some of the new resort developments on which some level of development activity is expected to commence during this financial year include, and I listed all of the projects that we expect some development to commence. That is on page 16 at the bottom. Then, so I listed all of the developments. Cordo Resort, the Shumase Resort, Tassi Resort, Ritz Carlton, Rivadori, Margaritas, etc. On page 18, we said that, Madam Speaker, in this fiscal year, we will witness the commencement of the construction of at least seven major resort developments right around the island. Okay? Now, Madam Speaker, I am sure, and the leader of the opposition is quite right. The leader understands what it takes to bring those projects in, apart from negotiating and all the rest of it, the time it takes. And the reason why we indicated the seven projects, Madam Speaker, it is because that it is not at the stage of mere an indication from the developers, but some of those projects have already started. Some of them, ground has been broken, financing has been found, and they are ready to move off the ground. There are many other projects apart from these that I would not mention because there is no clear indication that they will start. For example, there is the Caribbean Jewels project at Montima, and that project, I didn't mention it there, because they have not yet come forward, although they have indicated that they've got the resources, they have not come forward and given any clear indication that those resources are sitting in a bank and ready for execution of the project. We did not mention the redevelopment of the Rodney Bay Marina, which has already started, some $250 million that will be going into that project, Madam Speaker. And a number of other projects in the capital, the Raffles project, Madam Speaker, which of course the minister, the member of the SAB is the one who negotiated it. But notwithstanding, the fact is, Madam Speaker, our assessment is based on some assurance that those seven projects are almost guaranteed that they're going to start. Now, Madam Speaker, if we are to make an analogy of what transpired in the past, the leader of the opposition indicated that the growth rate in the country, I think he was the one, or it was the other members on the other side, one other member may have said it, spoke about the rate of growth. But Madam Speaker, it is not the first time we have seen in this country the rate of growth dipping to the level that we indicated there. And the thing about it is that we are being very honest. We've been very transparent in what we say. We opened up the book. We said it as it is. We gave the figures. You were able to have it. We didn't hide anything. We didn't pad anything. We gave you the figures indicating where we are. And I want to say this, Madam Speaker. Our assessment of the projected growth rate of 7% is based on the members of opposition, right? When they indicated, is based mainly on private sector investment. We haven't taken into consideration any of the public sector investment, none of them at all, that will influence the rate of growth. Now, if the honorable member can refer to the situation, I think it was in Anguilla, where he said Anguilla projected some 11% and achieved it. Why can't we project 7 and achieve it? Or achieve 5 or achieve 6? Huh? Why can't we do it? We have understood this within the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Economic Affairs. And through Cabinet, we have said this is an ambitious goal that we have set ourselves at 7%. And therefore, we must put in place the structures that are necessary, to push forward. One of the things we inherited, Madam Speaker, when we came into government, was the absence of the necessary structure within the government agency ministry to allow for the efficient execution of projects. And that is why, in a number of cases, when the EU complained about rate of implementation, it is because the whole structure within the Ministry of Planning, as it was called then, was dismantled. So they didn't have the capacity to really and truly execute those projects in a timely way to the satisfaction of those donor agencies. We have come in now and we've put in place those structures to ensure that the ministries are able to perform in terms of a national development planning network. You know, it is important to examine what was inherited from the last administration, Madam Speaker, where the development planning framework was non-existent. We have been able to put that in place, Madam Speaker, so as to be able to achieve the objectives of this administration. We have been able to put it within the Ministry of Physical Planning. In the 1980s, when the Ministry of Planning and Development was established, it was called the Central Planning Unit. Why it was called the Central Planning Unit? Because it was the nerve center of the government in terms of planning and development of projects. So once the idea was conceived, it went to the Ministry of Planning and Development, the Central Planning Unit, and that unit in itself conceptualized the program and developed it until it was ready for implementation, and it was implemented, dedicated for that purpose. That was dismantled over a period of time. We have put that in place, and we believe we have the capacity now to be able to execute the project as we said. But Madam Speaker, let us look at the issue of growth rate. The leader of the opposition said that the growth rate at this time is 0.5%. Of course, that is what is reflected. That is the situation. We are not lying. This is what it is. But let us go back to 1996 and let us see what happened over the years. And these are figures that come from the economic review, social and economic review, over the years. In 1996, the growth rate, the real GDP growth rate, was 1.56% in 1996. In 1997, when the Labour Party government took office, the growth rate was 0.31%. 0.31%. We have just taken over, the growth rate is 0.5%. Then in 1998, there was an improvement, 3.8% real growth rate. 3.8%. In 1999, Madam Speaker, it was 3.64% growth rate. But in 2000, Madam Speaker, it was minus 0.26%. you should tell us why. In 2001, it went further into deficit, minus 4.12% in 2001. In 2002, it rose a little from a deficit to 0.56%. In 2003, it was 3.53%. In 2004, it was 3.8%. In 2005, 4.6%. 2006, 4.89%. Now, if we were to look at those figures, Madam Speaker, and analyze those figures, one of the reasons for the growth rate in 2005-2006, the 4.63 and the 4.89, was Cricket World Cup. The government indicated to the nation that Cricket World Cup would have been the saving grace of St. Lucia. That come Cricket World Cup, all will be well. A lot of concessions were given. People took advantage of those concessions, extended homes, put in additional rooms, hotels attempted to do certain things in an attempt to cash in on Cricket World Cup. So what happened there, as a result of the boom in construction, Madam Speaker, we saw a spike in the growth rate of 4.6% in 2005 and 4.8% in 2006. But the Minister for Communications and Work Service, he said with all of this hype about cricket and the likelihood of not having sufficient rooms, etc., and the need to put in rooms, and hotels wanting to block off for cricket, a number of tourists, seasonal tourists, people who really don't want to get involved in cricket, decided to book other destinations and stayed away. But by the time the event came about, circumstances caused the whole situation to turn around. I will bring the evidence, Mr. Dr. Roberts. Pastor Roberts, I'll bring it. So, by two... Madam Speaker, so there was this great expectation for Cricket World Cup and all that would happen. Nothing happened. The government had to invest in tickets and distribute tickets to see the crowd, to realize the crowd which we saw at the ground. Okay? And that is the reality of the situation. So, this form 0.49%, Madam Speaker, in 2007, happened at a time when we suffered Hurricane Dean. When we suffered Hurricane Dean. Yes, I like Hurricane Dean like you like 911. You know, like you like 911. Because after 911, everything that happened was 911. You blamed 911 for everything. But I am not only blaming Hurricane Dean. I'm not just blaming Hurricane Dean, but I'm showing you also the performance of an aggressive government, a government that when it puts its shoulder to the wind, performs. We our banana crop got wiped out 65% damage. 65% damage. But those of you who experienced Dean, within days, we saw the government machinery in action. The city council was out in the city. Within 2 hours, the city was cleared, ready for business. In bananas, we came together, we brought AICA in. Within one day, we just sat down with us and started getting things going. You spoke about accessing the petroleum fund from Trinidad and Tobago. We accessed it, and the fund made available to us some $3 million, $6 million, which went to the farmers. But let's see what happened. In 2005, production of bananas, 30,007 tons in 2005. Huh? Oh, there was a drought. Okay. In 2006, 33,982 tons in 2006. Tsunami? in 2007, Madam Speaker, having wiped out 65% of our crop. 65% of our crop. We are still able to produce 30,318 tons. And that just did not happen, Madam Speaker. It happened because of the energy of the Minister of Agriculture, because of his effort and the work that he did in the banana industry, the confidence that he reinstated among farmers to be able to go back and to replant and to ensure that production levels rose to meet that 30,000 tons. If we are able, Madam Speaker, to produce 30,000 tons and match the 2005 figure and rival the 2006 figure, Madam Speaker, if all goes well and there's no dean and there's no tenure economics, if all goes well, Madam Speaker, this year will be an even better year for the banana industry. And you know why, Madam Speaker? It is because the government is maintaining, and this government I'm speaking of, is maintaining its position of a government in the interest of the farmers of this country. And so by the support that we give him, you heard the Minister for Agriculture. He said the term of the Bureau arrangement, the Banana Emergency Recovery Unit, has come to an end. And we have recognized at this stage we need to put in place a strategic arrangement to deal with production and management of bananas. And so that new unit is being set up to deal with it. So you'll find a new thrust in the banana sector to be able to bolster the effort, to bolster the production of the industry to meet our many targets. But more than this, Madam Speaker, is the fact that the banana, the St. Lucia Marketing Corporation, is going to be reorganized so as to meet the objectives that we've set ourselves. So, Madam Speaker, this is what the situation is in as far as the growth rate is concerned. And I am certain that having set ourselves the target of 7%, we are on the way to realizing it. And let me say this, Madam Speaker. Those of us who understand what it is to set targets and to work towards targets, and the Honourable Member from Castries South is smiling, that if you set yourself a target of 100% and you work towards 100%, you may not meet the 100%, Madam Speaker, but you're likely to meet 80%. You're likely to meet 80%. But why sell yourself short and say, well, I don't believe we can make 7%. Let's be realistic, let us make 3%, and so we end up in 1%. Madam Speaker, I think the 7% we have set is very ambitious, very ambitious. But we believe that if only we can do what is right, the kind of investments that we intend to do, we will be able to achieve it. The investment that we intend to do does not include the work that we're speaking of. The Minister for Housing indicated $65 million or $85 million for the new complex in the CDC area. We haven't spoken about the renewal of Castries. We haven't spoken about a number of the projects that we've set ourselves to do as a government. All of these, when put together, the target is not beyond achievement. Now, Madam Speaker, I want to deal with the issue, Madam Speaker, of recurrent expenditure, which the Leader of the Opposition raised, and asked why has recurrent expenditure increased. And the increase, I think, he's talking about is some 7% increase. Okay? Let me just detail some areas of increase, Madam Speaker. And I thought yesterday, on Monday, I attempted to explain some of the areas. The summer reinstatement of school teachers, additional staff increases, etc. In some of the secondary schools and a number of things. You know, the Ministry of Education had the policy of summer, no salaries to teachers. We are saying once you're a teacher, you earn your vacation as a teacher, you're entitled to your vacation as a teacher. That is going to cost us $3 million to do that. The training of teachers and the hiring of watchmen, transport subsidy, etc., $3 million. We had a particular situation, Madam Speaker, in the Ministry of Education, where for years the watchmen have been working some 16 hours thereabouts, 12 hours. And the union suddenly realized that watchmen are working 48 hours a week. And so said, they cannot work 48 hours, you have to, they must work 40 hours. But because the watchmen are working, as they paid by the hour, they paid by the hour, immediately upon reducing the hours of work, the salaries went down because they are paid by the hour. The union decided it's either they go on strike or you pay them, keep the wages that they earned before. We had to employ new watchmen. That has contributed towards the increase. 104 new watchmen. That has increased the amount. Then increases in the shift allowances, additional cooks for schools, the feeding program, etc. Again, it's a situation where the unions are saying that you cannot have a cook cooking for so many children. There's a quota. So cooks cannot cook for more than so many children. Therefore, we need to bring in some new cooks to assist in the cooking of and with the school feeding program. The training of island scholars, $1.2 million. Okay? Then you have the recurrent contingency retirement benefits, debt servicing. A lot of the debt now, Madam Speaker, has come up for payment. And so a number of things there which have come up have contributed to the increase in the recurrent expenditure. A number of situations. I spoke of the auxiliary fire officers, okay? And the annualization of the NIPO bolt project. In a number of cases, Madam Speaker, where the last administration entered into this NIPO arrangement, it is now maturing, where the government is called upon to come on and to pay meet your commitment as arranged under the agreement. So at this stage, we are being called upon to meet those agreements. Then we have the police, Madam Speaker. We took in an additional 69 special police constables. Those came from the Cricket World Cup. Allowances for rangers and rapid response, which are absorbed under the police force, all of these are contributing towards the increases. And a range of other things, Madam Speaker, that are coming up here, including an increase in supplies from the OECS drug pharmaceutical procurement unit. All of these are contributing across the increased subvention. It's a whole list of things, increased subvention to the St. Jude Hospital. These are some of the things that are coming up. Then, Madam Speaker, beg your pardon? Madam Speaker, then we move to the question of borrowing. I think the leader of the opposition at some stage in his presentation indicated that the government was going to, it is the highest ever, and that he was going to verify this because $235 million in debt. Madam Speaker, well, you must explain yourself.
Is there a point of order?
You explain yourself. Madam Speaker, so let me just give you the analysis, Madam Speaker, of the analysis of government borrowing. In 2002-2003, the government borrowed in loans and others $214,601,000. In 2003-2004, the government borrowed $281,553,000. $281,553,000. In 2004-2005, $145,870,000. In 2005-2006, $257,892,000. In 2006-2007, $335,767,000. 2007-2008, $218,893,000. So, what is the great difference? Or what is the great excess, between what you did and what we are doing? And in this case, Madam Speaker, when you get to the matter relating to the bond, you recognize some of it is ready to refinance some of the debt which is already on the book. So, Madam Speaker, these are some of the things. We spoke of increasing expenditure. Is there a possibility that there are structural problems unique to St. Lucia that cause St. Lucia to underperform as compared to other OECS countries? It would be interesting, I mentioned this, it would be interesting to see what happened in some of the territories. At one stage, I'm told, all of the OECS are covered or operate within the same environment. So Anguilla and Tigas and Kitts, they all. I brought up the issue of Anguilla, and I'm told it's not the same situation. But probably we should compare some of those other countries who are engaged in Cricket World Cup and those who are not engaged in Cricket World Cup, and to see if there's a correlation between the heavy investment undertaken by certain governments for Cricket World Cup as compared to those who did not take it. Because, for example, St. Vincent did not undertake the kind of investment that we undertook in Cricket World Cup. Huh? We did not. They did not. So, and they did not have these. So it would be interesting to look at those situations, Madam Speaker, so as to determine what exactly is the situation of St. Vincent. Then the opposition mentioned the question of petrocurrency. We have been very cautious about petrocurrency. I was in Venezuela last year at the CBD meeting, and I indicated to the minister responsible for energy that St. Lucia would like to look at the arrangement, look at what is being offered to us, and to make sure that it is to our benefit. I have had discussions with the ambassador, and I've indicated to him that we're seriously looking at it, and we want to come, and very soon we'll have a proposal come into cabinet, an analysis of what has been offered and to see how best St. Lucia benefits. The only concern we've had with petrocarriage, and I believe the former Prime Minister also had that concern, is really and truly whether there's any benefit immediately to the people so that it can reflect on in their pocket. If there are a number of other programs, you know, on the fringes, programs, social programs, etc. Then, if you want to create that as benefits to the people, we can look at it. But we are looking at it and doing an analysis so that very soon the government can take a position on the whole situation of the petrocarrier deal. The question of the sense to clarify the policy on Taiwan, re-grants, etc., etc. Last year, when we reflected in our budget that China had committed itself $204 million. It was the first time that China had made any commitment to be reflected in the budget. First time. In every instance, for example, you take the free zone in Vietnam. You take the stadium in Vietnam. The year that China was engaged in the construction of those projects, they brought down the material, the cement, they came, they built the hut for the Chinese to stay, they brought down their food, they brought down their chef, they brought down the construction worker, they brought down everything, including the material for the construction of the facility. And they brought down the contractor to build the actual facility. Nothing went into the economy and nothing was reflected in the estimate. As far as we are concerned, the Taiwanese came in and we have said to them, you have committed yourself to a number of national projects and therefore those national projects must meet the arrangements of the government and so it is reflected there. We cannot dictate to Japan if they want to engage in grassroots projects, how they should do their grassroots projects. We cannot dictate to France if they're engaging in grassroots projects how to undertake the grassroots project. Neither can we say to Taiwan in the implementation of the grassroots project, these are the ways you must do it. They have the parameters, they have the conditions, they have the principles, and so we operate on the same basis. All we ensure that we do, we put the necessary financial underpinning in place to make sure that it is done in the right way. And that is in place, and I'm confident as Minister for Finance that the arrangements that we have in place in terms of monitoring, evaluating, and ensuring that the projects are well executed, those arrangements are in place, and we are confident about it. The ministry, the question of the Ministry of Agriculture, the question of the meat processing plant, that meat processing plant, the abattoir, has been on the books for a long time. We have lost EU funding for it from 1999. We have lost EU funding for it because we failed to perform. We failed to do what was necessary. We have come in, Madam Speaker, and within how many months? Within 1 year, we have been able to obtain drawing, obtain costing, and had it not been for some slight technical discussion on the final design of the facility, the Taiwanese would have turned the sword a week ago for construction. And I am confident, Madam Speaker, that by the next time we get here, that project, if not completed, will be on its way to completion. The other thing, Madam Speaker, this thing about being elected for contractors, we never had a say when the Chinese decided to build the stadium as to who the contractor should be. The government didn't have a say who should be the contractor at the psychiatric hospital. They didn't have a say as to who should be the contractor at the airport. The fact is they brought in a contractor from China. In our case, we are adhering to the financial regulations of the land. There are several ways of procuring contractors. You can either go to open tender, you can either shortlist and invite tenders, to invite them to tender, okay? Or you can go the way that the former Prime Minister discovered and created by direct purchase. We have allowed.
This is outrageous. They are procurement rules.
This is outrageous.
And you should know better. They are procurement rules.
Honourable Leader of your position, you are to address the chair with your point of order. You have not raised the point of order yet.
Madam Speaker, I apologize, but it's outrageous. The Prime Minister knows better than this. There are procurement rules in the country. No contract by direct purchases of water without reference to the procurement rules. Which Prime Minister created a special rule? And you want cooperation from the opposition?
So you are suggesting that the Prime Minister has inaccurately stated what the rules are? Madam Speaker,
probably the leader of the opposition at the time, as Prime Minister, did not create it. But the interpretation was, I'm not being critical of you, your interpretation. But anyway, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I just indicated that there are several ways of awarding contracts, okay? And the Taiwanese have come down and they've said that we would like to engage local subcontractors, not even contractors, subcontractors on those projects, and they have chosen the option of inviting a number of contractors to tender. And that is the way they have gone. And it is in keeping with the rules. It is in keeping with the rules. Madam Speaker, I want to move on further, and the question of vehicles. I am told by the leader of the opposition that some 40 vehicles were purchased this year. There are a number of vehicles that were purchased this year, Madam Speaker. A renewal of the fleet. Because in 1998-99, the last administration purchased a number of vehicles. That fleet has become obsolete. And so we have renewed. Because in some instances, Madam Speaker, when we look at the operational cost of a number of those vehicles and you analyze it, it is better to put them out to sale and bring in new equipment that are more efficient, that the maintenance cost is much less. And that is exactly what we have done. What is going to be really important is to look at this year's estimates and to see whether there are any vehicles bound for purchase this year. If there are any, just two. Except for the local authorities. Except for them. Because they've got a function that they must meet. So, Madam Speaker, it is not extravagant. And I heard a member earlier on made a contribution and said, rather than government invest in purchasing vehicles and making vehicles available, particularly to ministers, government should review that policy and to see whether we can look at other things so that we take that responsibility in the hands of ministers by giving them certain conditions that they can live with rather than to have vehicles. I indicated, Madam Speaker, somewhere in the budget, the intention of the government to look at the whole question of transportation within the government system, within the public service, to see how we can put a system in place to manage, okay? How we can put a system in place to manage. Whether we can pool, create a central pool, and have it operated there, whatever it is, but we have taken that decision. We will be conducting an audit of government vehicles to determine how best we can manage the government pool. Then we move on the question of care to the elderly, Madam Speaker. I think it was the Honourable Parliamentary Representative of Via Kwanok who said that the budget has nothing for poor people, it doesn't speak to poor people, it doesn't say anything. I think the Minister of Social Transformation said it. Apart from the 20 program and all the rest of it, it is clear in the budget, it is detailed in the budget what the intention of the 20 program to improve the socio-economic living conditions of indigent, poor, and vulnerable households, and it goes on and on and on of what the intention is to assist people. The Minister for Health indicated to you as part of their program, while it was not stated in the budget, but the ministry is now engaged in reviewing public assistance to the indigent to make sure that we bring them up according to the cost of living and all that is happening around us. He indicated from $120 to, yes, so that is being done. What we have done in the budget, Madam Speaker, in terms of public assistance, where it is under review, in terms of salary negotiations, wage negotiations, which is ongoing, we have indicated that while we don't know what these will result in, so we have made the necessary allocation, the contingencies necessary to facilitate those improvements. Madam Speaker, I want to move on because I gave certain members the assurance that I wouldn't go for too long. I want to look at the question of university education, which was raised by the member for Kathy South. In one instance, I think it was the member for Sofra who was saying that to continue the program, while the member for Kathy South was saying now is the time to look at primary education. I personally believe that before we had even gone into the secondary program, the first thing we should have done is to strengthen the primary sector and then move on. However, we are there. We are saying we're going to look at it. I indicated one of the things we are looking at is the whole question of standardization of schools and also to prepare ourselves to move into university secondary education. And so, Madam Speaker, as you look through the budget, you'll recognize in a number of instances we have done what we are attempting to do is to transform and implement the vision that we've had. One member said that St. Lucia, the price of commodities in St. Lucia is the highest ever. We have done a study and we've used Barbados, St. Lucia, Grenada, St. Vincent, St. Kitts, Antigua and Dominica. In a number of instances, using 22 items, from baby juice to sliced bread. cheese, fondue, margarine, edible oil, powdered soap, salted biscuits, tea bags, carnation, and it goes on and on. Sardine, toilet paper, toilet soap, you just name it. Toothpaste, cornflakes, it goes on. And, note taken there. I'm sorry for you. Rice, flour, sugar. And I just mentioned just a few. In the case of baby juice, apple, in St. Lucia, 236, Grenada, 256, St. Vincent, 378, and Antigua, 286. St. Lucia is still the lowest. The only place where St. Lucia is higher is edible oil. In St. Lucia, 399, Grenada, 345, St. Vincent, 360, and Antigua, 365. Cheese in St. Lucia per pound, 1097. In Grenada, 1160. Barbados, 1036. St. Vincent, 1086. St. Kitts, 1795. Antigua, 1168. And Dominica, 945. So wherever you look, St. Lucia is reasonable. In salted biscuits, I think you mentioned salted biscuits, and St. Lucia seems to be higher than the others. St. Lucia is 275 for the trip. Grenada is 185, St. Vincent is $2, Antigua is 156, and Dominica 207. So in a number of cases, Madam Speaker, while members of opposition are accusing us of being unable to really do anything to impact, the little that we have done has assisted one way or the other with the price of those commodities. Madam Speaker, I just want to move on to the question of money spent, and I think it was Alva Baptiste who indicated that millions were spent on boxing. Oh, sorry, Madam Speaker. The member for Labrie, Madam Speaker, who indicated that millions were spent on boxing and American Airlines. Madam Speaker, why one may call our expenditure on boxing and American Airlines as being extravagant, but the boxing was viewed by millions the world over. Millions the world over. And the coverage that was given, Madam Speaker, you could not have done that for the price that you paid. Millions throughout the world to attract the kind of people that we're looking for on our shores. The member, the leader of the opposition, indicated that we have depleted the banking, the resources at the bank. We have depleted the reserves at the bank. Madam Speaker, I think he should again present to us the hard facts. Bring the evidence. Bring the evidence. Bring it.
I hate at this hour to do this. I don't know what is wrong with the Minister of Finance, but again, he is really misleading the House. I quoted from his own economic and social report. The report says that there is a credit crunch. These were my words. I read from it. I quoted from it. It is your own report that says you have a credit crunch. It says during 2007, the commercial banks experienced a liquidity crunch as the demand for credit exceeded the level of deposits in the system. This is not my word. For goodness sake.
Madam Speaker, the member did use those words too, but he also said, I'm sure if you look at Hansard, you'll recognize where, in addition to those words, he did say, because I wrote it as he said it, that we have depleted the reserve. I wrote it. Okay? Anyway, so Madam Speaker, these are some of the issues that I thought that I should take up regarding the presentation made by some of the members opposite with regard to the budget presentation this week. And so, Madam Speaker, as I close, I want to say that I am very pleased to be here first and foremost, as the parliamentary representative for the people of Castries North. And those people have, over the years, yeah, the Dubai passport, let me just say this, Madam Speaker. I have requested a report on that issue. I want to be quite frank, that I have absolutely no information whatsoever, no knowledge, and no evidence either, up to now, of this situation. And in fact, I have no evidence of this situation. Once I have the evidence, I will bring the evidence. I will bring the evidence. Once I have it, I will bring it. So, Madam Speaker, I want to take this opportunity at this time, very quickly, without much delay, to thank the people of Castries North, quite a few of whom I'm sure are probably fast asleep. But I want to say that in the last year, Madam Speaker, quite a bit was done, community projects, a number of community projects done with the support both of the government of St. Lucia and the Republic of China, Taiwan. A number of drainage projects were done in AGAD's land, retaining walls, support to indigent people, drainage, etc., etc. In Mondego, drainage, roads upgraded in Mondego, near the back of the Mondego school, retaining walls, steps along the Mondego road, in Wapatak, retaining walls, the question of repairs to the concrete hill, retaining wall, playing field, improved and reinstated rather, in BZ sidewalk, complete roadworks were done in BZ, paved, etc. Lance Road, sidewalks and drainage done near the Carmel Henry Memorial School. Entirely, all of the roads, not all but 90% of the roads were completed, paved. At Union Hilltop, retaining wall and improvement to road network, although that is to be continued. In La Prairie, quite a bit was done there, the rebuilding of sidewalks, improvement to La Prairie school, the school compound, that is the primary school and the secondary school, drainage, fencing, retaining wall, sidewalk, also the construction of a new road at Nicollet Hill, completed with paving and drainage. Cameron Heights received assistance to complete a project which was started by the last parliamentary representative, and they seem to be on their way to completion of that. As far as the future is concerned, Madam Speaker, we're looking at Union Hilltop for the completion of their road, Armondale and the Armondale-Balata Road, that bypass, Madam Speaker. I am told that we should receive support to have that bypass done and to bring some relief to those people in that general area. Then we have the completion of the roads at Agard, Madam Speaker. Some work was done there before, but we need to do some more work there. In Forgotten Boundary, Madam Speaker, and the Odlum City area, we are to do quite a bit of community projects in that area, but more so the linkage between Forgotten Boundary and Odlum City. In La Prairie, very soon, a new bus shelter will be constructed there, while at the same time at Active Hill, the Ministry of Physical Development has already moved in to regularize some lands in that area so as to give the people in that community some title. In Sealand Sunbelt, road rehabilitation, there's land which we have already acquired, that was done like 10 years ago, and now it is at a stage for the construction of a human resource development center. In Wapatak, the need to improve the sports recreational facility, that will be done in the coming months. Hillcrest Gardens, the improvement of the road chase gardens, the fancy Wapatak, and Cedars for improvement of roads. There's also improvement to the Caribel housing estate, which was a UDC project, but the roads there are in a terrible state. I am hoping that this year we can get that done and bring relief to those people. Chase Gardens Human Resource Development Center is another project that we're looking at, and if all goes well, the Republic of China, Taiwan has indicated their desire to get that project done. Then the fencing and upgrading of the Carrie Park and the establishment of a bus shelter in the BZ community. Madam Speaker, I want to thank you, I want to thank the members of this Honorable House for having made their own contribution towards this budget 2008-2009. I do believe that one of the things about the presentation, and I need to make it quite clear to the Honorable House, that when the Prime Minister stands and makes the presentation, the budget statement, it's really a contribution coming from all of the ministries. The ministries who come in together to put their programs together, and they make their some submissions, some narration, that the Prime Minister then takes in and sums up into one narrative for presentation in the House, reflecting each and every program by the various ministries. And the process is a very long process, Madam Speaker. It starts as far back as October, when the call is made and ministries begin to put their new thoughts, their new ideas, their new programs together, start formulating them until January, when we sit down and work the details of the budget until the programs reach the policy committee for consideration. I am confident, Madam Speaker, that members here will see the wisdom in the budget, what we are attempting to do, and will give this instrument the necessary support and to see its passing. I want to also take this opportunity, Madam Speaker. Most times Prime Ministers stand and make presentations of budget, but there are a lot of people in the background who really work hard on those programs. A lot of people. The various officers in the various ministries who put the actual programs together. The various accountants and analysts who come together to make sure that the figures are right, that they are formulated properly. Then the Ministry of Finance, who has the tedious task of working it through and making sure that it presents what is necessary, and most times they work late at night, work through weekends, just making sure that they meet deadlines to ensure that whoever that Prime Minister is can stand here on the day in question and make the presentation with a statement. I want to thank them immensely for the work they have done, for the support they have given me, the support they have given the government and the government before. To all of them, I say thank you, and I hereby, Madam Speaker, close this presentation and seek and commend this bill to honorable members. I thank you.